All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. If you hunt areas similar to ours, you probably have poor soil. You know, down here in the deep south, we are often relegated to planting our food plots on old logging decks, logging roads, power line right-of-ways, clear cuts, things of that nature. So you're often dealing with topsoil erosion and just poor quality soils. Well, there's a way you can improve those soils and get better food plots in the future, and that is Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill. There's a couple different things in this blend that are going to help out your soil. First, there's brassicas. They've got deep roots that are going to break up that compacted soil. You know, a lot of times a logging deck, they've been driving equipment all over that thing, so that soil is packed in there. So that's going to help break that up. And it's also got buckwheat and sorghum, which are going to provide organic material that's going to build your topsoil, and it's going to suppress weeds. Then there's also some clovers in there, which recharge the soil with nitrogen and help loosen that soil as well. This is an excellent thing to plant in early summer because not only is it attractive and nutritious for deer, but also it's going to start prepping your soil and building your soil for this fall and even the following fall. So try out Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill, plant it for a season or two, get your soil rebuilt, and then you'll have a prime food plot for planning anything that you want. Again, that's Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill. Y'all go check it out at whitetailhill.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Today, we got our bow tech in the house, Mr. Robbie Yates of Mark's Outdoors. Robbie, how are you doing?
Good, man. I'm good. It's hard to think about bows right now, though.
Yeah.
I know.
A little bit of turkey season action going on.
We got
the ginger bow hunter over here. Wait, he's not the ginger bow. I don't know why I keep saying that. He ain't shot anything with a bow in years at this point.
A couple. Yeah, I just think it went last one. Two years ago.
What'd you just say?
I didn't get one last year. Sorry,
that was all one word.
I know that was.
You didn't separate your words.
Coors Light. Sorry, I had some in my mouth. No, okay, we'll get past the whole ginger bow hunter thing. You know, we'll circle back to that later. But no, Robbie, super excited to have you on. We're talking. You know, even though you know, we always anytime someone asks about like Mark's Outdoors, I'm like, yeah, dude, you gotta go see Robbie Yates. You gotta go see Mark Smith. All right, every time, but. We're not talking bow hunting. We're not talking deer hunting. We're talking turkey hunting on this episode. And I'm excited for this episode because this is something I think we talked about doing this. You and me have kind of talked about doing this. I think it was last year, really. And we never got around to doing a turkey episode. But, Robbie, you're a big-time turkey hunter. It's kind of funny. You know, when I go to Mark's Outdoors, you're the only one that really wants to talk turkey a whole bunch. Like, oh, yeah. This great detail. You know, I got some other guys in the store, but, like, when it comes to, like, turkeys, like, listen, dude, this is what's going on. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of get into it, Robbie. First off, how did you get introduced to turkey hunting? Did you grow up in like a turkey hunting family, or were you just kind of introduced by someone else? How was that like for you?
All right, so growing up, obviously me and my dad fished all the time, and we deer hunted. And the majority of the deer hunts, we were either in Mississippi or going to my uncle's over in Phoenix City. And Uncle Johnny was he was there at Smith Station. Everybody knew Uncle Johnny. And but I remember all these turkey fans in his hunting room and everything. And I remember one spring break telling him, like, he asked me, he said, "You want to go turkey hunting?" I was like, "Absolutely, I'll go turkey hunting." So I went out there with some – there used to be a store in Pelham, and it was called the Command Post. It was an Army surplus store.
I remember the Command Post.
All right.
Dude, I love
so I go
that
in there,
store.
And I'm like, I need some new camo. So I got my BDU, you know, some those black and red rubber boots from Walmart, you know, that have no insulation. Yeah. And but anyway, I remember him the first morning getting up, and, man, I was just like – I couldn't sleep that night. I was just like, man, I got to see what this turkey hunt's about. And so we went out that morning. I remember we were not far out of Columbus, Georgia, and we get out of the truck, and you know, I'm just pumped. He had this I think it was an 83 or 84 model Toyota truck. You know, just the typical old school turkey hunter.
Single cab.
Yeah.
He had this green ammo Army satchel thing that held all of his call. He didn't have a vest so much, like an actual vest. It was more of a shirt with some pockets and stuff, but he had this little green Army bag, and it had like calls in it. And but anyway, we get out that morning, and we're walking through down this road, and he starts hooting, and I had never heard that. I didn't know what it was, and I bust out laughing. I said, "What are you doing?" And you know, because I'm 9 years old.
Yeah.
And he says, "I'm making a hoot owl sound." And I was like, and I couldn't quit laughing. So he was trying to, he's like, okay. And every time he'd do it, I'd bust out laughing. I couldn't quit. And so finally I get a hold of myself, and I heard the bird gobble for the first time. And I was just, from there on out, it was like game on. And I won't never forget that first morning with that. And I spent a lot of time turkey hunting with him through the years. And man, it's just, he lit that fire in me. And like I said, he passed away a few years ago. Man, it's you know, I remember calling him for turkey season every year and talking to him, getting a plan together. But that's what got me in it. And then from there, man, it was any time I turned around, I was asking people, knocking on doors, "Hey, can I turkey hunt? Can I? Hey, I noticed you got birds out there, and notice you need some work on that fence. You know, can I trade you some work for some turkeys?" And something about turkey hunting just grabbed a hold of me and never let go. So,
yeah, and one thing that's kind of interesting, we talked about this previously with you, or I've talked to you about this at the store, about you were not afraid at all to knock on doors, and you talked about, you told me about that a long time ago, about the whole, you know, you had property all around Birmingham to hunt at times, especially before it really kind of got as developed as now. If I remember correctly, was there property you hunted somewhere in Hoover that's now
fairly highly developed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, for the record, it was never a gun. I did bow hunt it. Do I need to go into detail on that?
It's up to, I'll leave it up to you. I mean, it's all good, but it's like, it's kind of funny because it's like, if people go down that highway, you'd like, why would there be turkeys here?
But
it's
anybody familiar with the Birmingham area, there was a place that on Highway 150 called CarMax. And
oh, no kidding.
So I was working some nights and weekends at a dealership right next door to there before CarMax was built. And one of the managers there was a big turkey hunter, and we were talking one day, and he brought up turkey hunting, and I was like, oh, here we go. I'm gonna get in the goods with this. We're sitting there talking, and so they were clearing out this property next to CarMax, mm-hmm. or next to the Toyota place. Mm-hmm. And so they had all this. They had put a bunch of rye up on this hill. One afternoon, I'm standing out there, and I see these three strutters, and I'm like, good gracious, man, I'd love to be able to hunt that. Well, at that time, the people that had Toyota, I said, look, you can hunt with a bow behind here if you want to, but you got to be out at a certain time. Because mm-hmm. I get it. You know, you got customers, and here comes some guy with a deer in the parking lot, somebody trying to buy a Tundra. So so I mentioned, I was like, you know, hey, try to turkey hunt, you know. And I was like, plus with bow, it would be kind of cool. And I did. I took advantage of it when I could. And so the first few turkeys with my bow, where I call them my CarMax turkeys because that's where it was. But, yeah, it's crazy, man. Through the years, I've been blessed, man. I've had opportunities with knowing people not only through the store, just places that, like, now are big developments that I was able to turkey hunt. It's crazy, mm-hmm. you know, and that was early on. I'm sure there's probably a lot of people that were still turkey hunting out there too, you know, without permission. But I mean, at that time, there was just nothing but woods all the way back through there. You had all the property there at Hoover Met and places like that. And it was crazy. I mean, you're talking in the early 2000s, man. And that's when, like, it was just nuts, man, the amount of birds you would see around those areas. And then, like I said, neighborhoods got developed and they got, you know, shifted here, and I think most of them are over by Ross Bridge now, so
yeah. But down a little golf course. No, that it's kind of funny though, because I remember you telling me that story. I was like, that's the funniest thing ever. But it kind of goes back to, like, your passion for turkey hunting and willing to try to knock on doors and just find different properties all around, especially Birmingham. But, you know, you've hunted, you know, a few different states, you know, hunt a bunch of public land, especially in other states as well, which we're going to talk about in this episode a little bit later on. But it is kind of fascinating how you were able to kind of cultivate that passion without having to go spend a ton of money on getting in a lease or a hunting club or anything like that. Because did you do that at all early on?
There was two places that I hunted that was considered a hunting club. Like, there was two different properties, but it seemed like I was always on the management area. Like, when my parents built their place in Montevallo, it was just, I mean, I could leave out of their place on the four-wheeler, and back in those days, when you'd ride, it was okay. But anyway, but I hunted growing up, and but some of those places, like I said, were just turkey hotspots. And one thing was funny about that, though, is when he told me, like, yeah, you can turkey hunt out there. And but he said, don't say anything. And I'll leave the names out. Yeah. But he said, don't say anything to, it was the manager at the place at the time for the used car lot. And I was like, okay. And because I guess I don't know if he approached him or something, but he's just, for some reason, he took a liking to me and was like, mm-hmm. yeah, you can do this. And I remember it was like towards the end of spring, and we were standing out there in the car. He goes, you know, man, I ain't seen them three toms, man, in forever. Like, he goes, they ain't been coming around. And I'm sitting there trying to bite. I'm like, yeah, there's no tellings, you know. And I was like, it was so hard to be like, well, but you know how it is being turkey. You want to be, well, probably, you know. But it was funny. But I had to, I guess it's out of the hat now. But, yeah. but yeah, it was funny, man, because I will never forget that. Man, those birds, just, I hadn't seen them. Man, where'd they go? And I'm like, I don't know.
Then the local dog got after them.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. No, that's hilarious. Well, when did you start hunting out of state? Because I think you're originally from, or do you have family from Mississippi? Like,
We're originally from Mississippi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But moved over here, like I said, when my dad was in banking, so we moved over here when I was a young age. So, I still went to school over here, grew up over here, but that, Mississippi's still home. But I started really going more out of state kind of early, gosh, man, more 2002. 2002 is when I started going more out of state. Started with like Kentucky, Illinois, places like that, and then then I found Georgia, and like Willie Nelson, man, got Georgia on my mind. It's all the time, man. It's just, you know. And by the way, the hunting there is awful, so nobody goes.
You just go for the views, right?
Yeah. So since 2002, really have been trying to go more out of state and do some stuff.
And was that bow for deer and turkey, or mostly turkey specifically?
It actually started off at that time more deer, bow hunting and stuff. Man, I had a run, you know, where I was constantly, I really wanted to do these, you know, like Western Kentucky and places like that, man. I was like, oh, I got an opportunity, and had to do somebody in that there through. It's kind of a long story, man. That's what I love about this industry, and when you're meeting people, it's all about the fellowship, man. So like people that you meet, you talk to, and the next thing you know, man, you know, like even now, like, you know, 20 something years later, they're like family, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what it kind of started off as, deer hunting. And then I remember being in Kentucky, and I was like, man, it's like you never saw a field that didn't have 20, 30 birds. And I mean, strutters everywhere. And I'm like, man, I've got to figure something out. And man, I talked to this particular property owner, and he's like, absolutely, man. And he's like, man, I'll take you to another place. I got a buddy that probably let you hunt. And next thing, it was one person after another. Mm-hmm. And then started messing with public land a lot more up there. And man, I tell you, it's just awesome, man. So.
Are you particularly drawn to that mountain scene? Is that like kind of your thing? Are you seeking that out in multiple states? Or
yeah, so something about, like, I guess that goes back to being a kid. Like growing up, we were never beach people. We were always in the mountains. So I've always loved being in the mountains. There's something about those cool mornings, the fog on the mountains, man. The weather's constantly changing. The scenery. It's just everything about the mountains to me just draws me to those things. And so, yeah, I think when it came to turkey hunting, when I really started hunting in those mountains and stuff, and man, it changed. Like, I love to turkey hunt. Don't get me wrong. I love doing it in Alabama, Mississippi, but it's to the point now to where, like, I tell people, man, when my time's to retire, or maybe before then, I'm headed that way. That's where I want to go, you know?
So let me ask this, because we're going to talk about, you know, mountains, because it seems like every time I talk to you about turkeys, it's always mountain hunting, mountain hunting birds every single time. And, you know, that's interesting, especially when you're talking about, like, being originally from Mississippi, living in Alabama, and not in a mountainous part of Alabama by no means, but that's like a passion of yours now. When did that start? Like, what was your first experience hunting turkeys in like a more mountainous setting?
So, now you're talking about like out of state or just
was it Alabama or what state was it in originally?
So there is a place in the state that I did go with somebody. Now this was not a public land on there, and but it was up in kind of a north part of Alabama, and there's some pretty large mountains up in there. And I just remember that morning, I'm thinking, I'm gonna die getting up these hills and stuff like this. But man, we got up there and the birds got, it was just a, I don't know, it just, it was different. I keep talking about like the view of everything, man, and it just, I was blown away. Like, I don't know how to describe it, man. It's just like there's certain things, like people travel over all over the place, and they say, man, I've been everywhere in the world, but this particular spot, this is my favorite place. And you go, why? And they say, I can't describe it. Mm-hmm. But it was just something about being in those mountains. But it also made me a better turkey hunter. And the reason I say that is because it was very tough at first, because you have to, you know, learning, you know, how the terrain's changing and how those birds were. And, you know, it seems to me like, too, we talked about this earlier, man, when a mountain bird gobbles, it's a whole different gobble to me. And that might not be, I mean, scientifically, that might not be correct. It's just for me, and that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Like, to that individual, you know, I tell people, don't worry about what everybody else does. Do what makes you happy. So for me, it's just like, man, but it's something about the way that those birds, when they gobble and it carries through those mountains, it puts, I'm getting chills now, man. I'm ready to go. I'm fixing to leave out in 2 weeks, man. I can't wait.
Yeah, buddy.
But Georgia, that's real, man. It's just an unbelievable thing. I think I'm answering that right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of interesting again how that's become more of a passion for you. So you had that first experience in North Alabama. But it was something about that experience, you know, almost like finding some peace in that struggle. Because, again, it's a struggle, like, physically hunting those areas. But, like, when you have birds working and just, like, the scenery, the whole nine yards kind of is what put together for, like, dude, I love this.
Oh, yeah. And one thing, honestly, it's funny because what I do, I'm a people person. Don't get me wrong. I love people. I love talking to people. I'll talk to anybody. But, man, up there, there's nobody. Like, where I'm hunting, like I told y'all, I bumped into one person. It wasn't hunting. It was coming out and gave him a ride. it's just like, man, it's so desolate. There's nothing there. There's no airplanes. I don't hear. I don't even think I've ever seen or heard an airplane up there. Like, it's just where, and I'm not saying there's not. I just don't hear them because I'm deaf. But, like, I mean, I could be hunting next to a runway and not know it. But it's just like, man, it's just a different terrain. It's a different experience for me. And it's like, it is the most peaceful thing knowing that I'm the only person. If there are other hunters, I've never bumped into them, but it's like, man, it's just me.
Yeah.
You know, and I just feel like, you know, I don't know, man. I can't describe it.
I'm curious about when you first started going to North Georgia and hunting the mountains every year. I mean, did you just get your tail whooped? Like, did it take you a while to start killing some turkeys?
So what I'm saying here, and I very understand, I'm not trying to sound, gosh, what's the word?
Arrogant?
I don't want to sound arrogant when I say this because I feel like it was almost, they laid in my lap, man. So at that time, you had 3-bird limit. You could take 2 birds in 1 day. first 3 days, I was done. And, I mean, I was hunting spots. I mean, I'm just blind and just had incredible hunts. And a lot of that has to do with pressure. I think people, because there's not anybody up there. And so birds were doing what we want birds to do. And I hit about a 7-year straight every year, just hammered. I mean, you go up there for a few days and it's like, man, it got to the point to where the birds in this area, no joke, like I would have an opportunity to double. I don't like that because I like to see if I've got 2 birds, you know, people say, man, if you can double, why not? Well, to me, that other bird, that's a whole nother day, a whole nother experience, and a whole nother hunt.
Yeah.
That's just how I am. And I don't want to be too greedy with that, too, because I feel like this is something that, you know, the good Lord allows us to do. Like, don't take advantage of it, right? Mm-hmm. But then I go out there the next morning, smoke one. It's like, well, what's the day? You know, so it's just, but man, I was hitting places. And what was funny was, is that, like, every time I went, I was going to somewhere new. And I, before the whole Onyx thing, you know, I was looking at like a map of certain places and I was, you know, like Google Maps or something. And I would just start looking at stuff and I'd go, there's got to be turkeys there. I mean, there's got to be just how that terrain looks. It's got to be. And man, I just go out on a limb, go out there and it just felt like it would happen. And, then some reality started sinking in because I guess it was about, wasn't last year before last, man, I had a tough season up there, man. I mean, a really tough season. Weather got me. I mean, it was awful. The weather just stunk. I think I took one bird. I think there's only been 2 seasons that I haven't taken the allotted, you know, limit. But man, I'm gonna tell you, last year I took a bird, took one up there, and it started sleeting and snowing. It was 25-mile-an-hour wind. It was crazy. I was like, where did this weather come from, man? I mean, I was like sitting, I've never hunted and stuff like that. I mean, I hunt rain or something. And I hunted all day long, and at 5:30 I got on, there was 2 gobblers actually down in this bottom, and they had some hens with them. And so what I'm finna say, some people will sit there and go, man, that really didn't have to call to them. But I was at the top of this huge, huge ridge, and there's like these drainages going down. And I remember just easing down. There's up there, you have like, you have that, what I call it, rhododendron.
You have both rhododendron and Mount Laurel.
Okay. So this rhododendron is like, it's real thick vines, like. And so I was like, man, I wish I was kind of easing through, and then you'd hit a spot where it'd be just wide open. And so I would have to get on my belly and I'd crawl, and I was using these big white pines up there, these huge, huge white pines, man. And I just started coming down the mountain on them, and I would call and they'd gobble, but they were just staying down in this spring area. And so finally the hens kind of took off to the right. They left, and so those gobblers started walking away, and that's when I gobbled. And then when I gobbled, they turned around and started working their way towards me, and they got to about 30 yards, and it was done. And I was like, man, I remember, like, taking that bird going, I can't believe that just happened. To come that far down the mountain. Of course, the wind was blowing so hard. Mm-hmm. The noise, what they couldn't hear nothing, and but the past two seasons there has been a little bit slower, and it's not because of turkey. It's been weather related. I hadn't seen a like population decline or nothing like that.
What's the population like in the mountain? I mean, is there a lot of turkeys? Because typically when I hear people talk about mountains, at least for deer, it's low population density. Like you got to cover some ground to find them.
So what's funny about that is like in Alabama, you look at properties and you sit there and go, man, they got a lot of turkeys because you see 25 or 30 in this field. You see 15 or in the mountains. You don't see that.
Yeah.
To me, I don't see that. What I do is I get in areas and I'll get that one hot bird that might have a couple of hens or something. Like I'm not seeing big numbers of turkeys up in the mountains. Not like I'm like if you're walking and you're busting birds and they're going everywhere. I'm not seeing like big numbers like that, but like big flocks. I think looking back now that you asked that, I think the biggest flock of turkeys that I have seen where I hunt up there has been maybe 8 or 9 birds at once. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, I'll catch a hen but most of the time these gobblers, man, it seems like they're, you know, very seldom, but they've got several hens with them.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's just huge population, you know? But it seems to be okay because every year we seem to do okay.
There's enough of them, right?
There is.
Yeah.
But it is different though, man. And it's just like, you're just not seeing them because there's no telling what I'm not seeing. You know, that's the thing. Cause you're walking these mountains, man. Sometimes you're 3,400 foot, 2,800. I mean, it's all over the place. So there's things that you just never see. Who knows what's there?
Or don't even hear too, in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
in my case for sure.
Well, it's like, cause I mean, there could be something on the backside of one of these big ridges gobbling. And if you're on the opposite side of a huge ridge system, you might not hear him because he might be 300 or 400 feet down below you on the back side of a ridge, and you may be 100 foot below off the top of the ridge on the opposite side. So it's like, you know, that, and you're dealing with a lot of high winds probably in some cases. So it can make it extremely tough, which is interesting, specifically with like that mountain hunting.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about something that you mentioned, like before Onyx, you were kind of studying maps and stuff, and you said you look at the terrain and you're like, oh yeah, there'll be turkeys there. What about the terrain makes you think there's going to be turkeys in a spot?
So it was kind of like starting off, what happened was when I went up there to scout and was looking at everything, and then I was taking what I scouted, and then I'd look at it on the map, and I'd look at that, and I'd sit there and go, okay, this is where I saw a sign. Now, why is this? Why was I seeing a sign here? I was trying to – gosh, man, Onyx is great now because it shows you so much more. But I was taking those two things and kind of studying and going, okay, if I'm seeing birds here, this is what the terrain looks like. So I'd start marking that. Well, then I would – I would look at terrain in another area and go, it's similar, so I wonder if there's birds. And so every year when I'd go up, I'd check these spots. And there's always a what's the word I'm looking for? Like a light bulb that goes off. And that's water up there in the mountains. And it doesn't, when I say water, I'm not talking about like ponds. I'm not talking about creeks, natural spring heads. Like up in these mountains, you'll be walking, all of a sudden, you know, you get into this area and it's like rocks. It looks like somebody just put a bunch of rocks up there, and it's a spring head, and then it flows in between, I guess y'all call them saddles. Mm-hmm. So you got this big notch or whatever. The real steep ones, I'm not seeing that. It's where they're kind of more
gradual,
like a gradual deal. So those were places that I was seeing it. And then on, what I call, like I said, I don't use the right terminologies, I know, but what I call an old logging road. So, like, some people call them ledges and stuff. And, like, what you talk about, I've heard y'all speak about this, like, when the terrain comes down, it levels out. It don't have to be very much. It might only be a 3 or 4 foot area.
Like a bench.
Okay. But some of these places that I'm seeing where I see the birds are not benches. I think it's actually at one time where they logged in those mountains and they're making these cuts around these big points.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's been money. But then when you start looking, you're like, okay, there's one there, there's one there, there's one there. So you got to find the sign. But it's almost like old roads that are in the tops of these mountains that topo doesn't show. That makes sense. Like, if you try to, like, I've looked at it 1,000 times, tried to figure out, okay, is this a topo feature, or is this an actual man-made, like, logging road? And it's just, that's what it looks like. So it's like somebody took a skid steer 100 years ago. Well, they wouldn't have skid steers 100 years ago, but whatever. It's just like and they're not very long. It's like they just die out. But they're made, looks like roads, man, on these mountains. And then I try to find there's some places that have like an open meadow, like a natural meadow that's not man-made. Those have always been pretty good. I mean, an afternoon they'll get out there, and it's just. But I see all mine are always on these hillsides.
Do you pay attention? Do you want to find areas with like a lot of points coming off into like a bottom or something that would have some of these features? I mean, do you ever pay attention to like the points or any kind of ridge, secondary ridge points or anything dropping off into a spot?
So the places that I've been finding up there, not necessarily like ridge points.
Yeah.
Now on the bear stuff, that's different. That's a whole other story. But like, it seems like these honestly, man, it's kind of it's hard to explain it, because sometimes you look back and I look back in the past couple of years and I go, man, they were just really everywhere. You know what? It was just about being at the right spot at the right time, because you go to those spots and they weren't there, and then you go, man, I'm going to go check this other spot. And it was in a spot that you think, well, man, I'd have never thought they were going to be there, but that's where they were. But at the end of the day, they're not far from where those are, where those, I call them like little, like old logging roads. Yeah. It's not an actual logging road, if it makes, I don't, like,
so
I said,
like, there's a cut. There's like a cut on the side of the ridge that they're kind
of,
like,
very little. And I mean, there's trees in them. I mean, but you could walk, like, there's one place where I actually, when I was up there bear hunting one year, I saw a bear. He was way up at the top of the mountain. I'm like, man, that son of a gun is moving. Like, and he was walking. I was like, what? I look on my topo maps, there's nothing showing. I'm like, he is walking like it is flat. You know what I'm saying? And so sure enough, man, the next day, of course, I was packing. I was like, I got to go check this out. And it was this road. Well, that has been a hot spot for me. I mean, I've killed multiple birds on this place. And it opens up into these big flats up on the top of the mountain. I say on the top, it's about halfway up. But like, there's these big, just kind of flat rolling areas and acorn trees everywhere. And, man, that's where they love those acorns.
So how do the turkeys use those old roadbeds? I mean, how do you see them? I mean, is it something like the gobblers like wanting to strut on it and spend a lot of time on them?
Gobblers like to strut on them. That's what most all the birds that when I've shot has been on one of those. The hens are usually feeding above or below, you know, where he can see them, but they're always feeding on that steep incline. You know, you see it like with turkeys scratching and everything, but that gobbler, he's always on that flat spot showing off, I guess, but.
What kind of scale are you hunting on in the mountain? Like when I look at Onyx or something, North Georgia, the ridges are like gigantic. It seems like it's like big terrain features compared to like if you look at a topo map of like here, like where we're sitting right now, there's just like a bunch of little points all over the place. But if you go up there, it's like a much, much bigger scale. So are you trying to find those smaller terrain features, or are you just looking at the big giant stuff and taking that for what it is?
I'm just looking at it. And there again, there's a lot of people that can look at these maps a lot better. Like, you guys are spot on y'all stuff. Like, when my thing is, I like to get the boots on the ground, and I'll find an area and I'll pin it, and then I'll go back to Onyx and I'll go, I don't know why they're in. I mean, this doesn't make any sense to me why they're right here in sometimes, you know. But yeah, it's a lot bigger scale. But there again, these flat areas and where these springs come out, it seems to be, I mean, that's like, well, here in 2 weeks when I go, first place I'm hitting is two of my favorite spots, and that's how it is, like that, you know. And hopefully I'll look up and get a deaf and blind turkey up there and try to get one. But it's just, you know, and there again, like on some of these national forests too, you do have, you know, you'll have some roads that and it's not like all off-road. Like, there's a lot of that, most of that stuff I like to get, you know, away from everybody and everything. But there are some places where, you know, I can come into a spot. I've learned certain areas where I can walk for 45 minutes or so to a spot and get back on the backside of a spot to where maybe there is a road, but it might be 15 miles to that spot if you were on that road going around the mountain, but they've blocked it. So there's no traffic. you know. And so then all of a sudden now I'm on the backside of that. So then I walk those roads and try to see, hey, man, if there's – just like we do, check, see if there's tracks, see if there's a strut zone or something. Cool thing happened. This has been – I've got the picture. I don't know. It's been about 4 years ago. I told you about the Army deal, the guys training. So that day, actually, where they were at, and they were – so I they were Rangers training. They were doing mountain phase training. And they said, yeah, we got several teams coming through this area. And they're like, man, I can't believe you're out here turkey hunting, man. Like, what in the world? And I'm sitting here going, like, this is crazy, man. Like, I told them, I said, I've never seen anybody out here. They actually asked me if I was okay. They were like, man, are you all right? You know where you're at? I'm like, yeah, man. I started at 5 o'clock this morning in the dark, you know, and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm way back out. You know, I was planning on packing in just sleeping up there that night. And they're like, yeah, man. They said, we've never seen anybody back in here. I'm like, that's cool, man.
That's good to know.
And, I'm in the right spot.
Yeah. And so he's like, man, he says, but we've got several, well, he called them teams that are coming through. They're mapping, working on mountain phase and mapping and stuff like that. And I started talking to him, and I said, I asked him where he came in from. And he told me, and I was like, yeah, man, I said, that's about an hour and 45 minute walk if you go up through these two ridges. And he's like, dude, that's spot on. And I was like, man, this is an area that I just know, right? And so I was like, well, shoot, man. So I was like, well,
hour and 45 minute walk. Let's everybody pay attention to that. Hour and 45 minute walk. Okay, keep going.
Okay. So
it's a long ass way.
That's a long way, man. And that's not flat, you know?
No, not at all.
But it was funny. So I'm sitting there going, you know, well, they're not really messing my hunt up, man. There's, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousand acres up here. But where they were at was an area that it was kind of like my stopping point. I had never really scouted any further or whatever. So I just start walking, and I walk about 40 minutes, and I come into a bunch of sign, man. And I'm like, man, this looks fresh. So I'm just going to sit down. So I was in almost like a, I don't want to call it a ditch, but it was a real low area. And I mean, like literally it was an awesome setup, and I could see down this old logging road and scratch all around me and everything. And I'm getting my calls out, and I'm sitting here, and I'm like, man, what am I going to do? And so I yelped a couple times, and I was like, oh, I got to get my game ear in, you know? So I put my game ear in, and all of a sudden I hear like this, like I can hear leaves, and I'm like, where is that? Sounds close, you know? And I look in a probably less than, I'm going to say 10, maybe 10 yards, if that. A gobbler pops up off of this rock ledge of a creek. Like there is like, it sounds like whitewater. Like it is a, there's this creek's probably 4 foot wide, and it is just, it'd been raining, and it was just, you couldn't hear anything, but I heard this, you know, I heard something walking, and he just pops up, and he's like looking, and man, he gets on the backside of my shoulder, and I'm like, man, I've got to turn on this bird. And so I kind of like turn into this stump. And when I go to shoot him, I didn't realize where my gun was right here. It wasn't in my shoulder. It was
inside of your elbow or bicep.
On my bicep. Ooh, and when let me tell you, that's just the start of the story, what happened to me. But when I got him, I was like, I can't believe this. This is a brand new spot. It was the first spot I sat down to, and I was like, man. And I'm not saying, oh, look what I did. I'm just saying, like, I couldn't believe it happened. Now I'm like, now I got a bird, and now I've got to go all the way back out. So I've got to go back past all these guys. Well, where I parked my truck, there's this little open kind of a field. When I got back there, you had unmarked cars, guys in their like sleeping bags, and not tents, like sleeping, all military, right? And they're all and they're like, dude, they called me Birmingham. It was funny because he's like, Birmingham. And I'm like, I was like, man, he's, man, we heard you shoot. We're like, there's no way he just shot a bird. We just left. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
And I started laughing. And but I remembered my arm. I couldn't straighten my arm out. And he was like sitting there, and he's like, dude, you all right? I was like, man, when I shot, man, my arm. And he says, ooh. And I'm like, this is like a military medic. And I went, look, man, don't. Dude, listen, I can't describe it. I couldn't move my arm for like 4 days, and it finally popped. When it did, my whole arm turned black, and for like four weeks, man, I couldn't move. I could not move my arm. I couldn't work on a bow. I couldn't do anything.
What did it do?
So when you're shooting, you know, at that time I was shooting the Nitro TSS in an 870 Express, right? 24-inch barrel.
Yeah.
I would have rather have been kicked by a mule than this gun. But when it, I mean, it just, it absolutely destroyed that bicep, man.
Oh, shit.
And so I remember walking out of there, but like, it just, it's crazy, man. But yeah, that, but it was just, like I said, that was a whole nother feature of that, that area that I didn't realize. So there again, I marked that spot and started, and I went, once I started scouting that area, I figured out why that bird was where he was at. There was this huge bottom down there, man. And when that, when the, when that, it's not a creek, it's a stream, whatever mm-hmm. comes down through there. Sometimes when it rains, it floods in some areas. Man, there were grubs, grasshoppers, everything was in there for food. Like, so it was like a perfect time. He had to just been coming through there.
Yeah.
But
how often when you're hunting like in those mountain areas, if you looked at like kind of where you've had success with birds in relation to like bottoms, like a lot of guys, when they think turkey, they're thinking like hunting bottoms, hunting, like if we're talking like thermal hubs, like, you know, like a bowl where you have three or four ditches all come together in one spot, like an area like that seems like to be a hot spot for birds. How often have you killed birds like in the mountains in that area versus like up on like the sides of these ridges?
I've killed a lot more birds in those, on the side, like low sides, not high sides, like low sides into these long bottoms. You know, sometimes in those mountains, you'll have a bottom that might run a mile and a half down through there, especially if you got water. So if you got a creek and that creek is coming down the mountain, or that, that stream comes down that mountain through there. So it's a lot, there's a lot of big, where you have a lot of huge hillsides that kind of come in, they flatten out a little bit, but you're still elevated. Like you're not at the bottom of the mountain. You're, let's say a quarter of the way up, but you just in these mountains, all of a sudden you hit these flat spots, and that's what I've seen that they loved being.
Yeah, just up out of that bottom, kind of that, yep. that next kind of tier yep. up.
Yeah, I'm not sitting to where I'm having to put my feet against something to keep me from sliding down a hill to kill a bird. I'm not hunting that steep, and I know guys that do. Like, don't get me wrong, but I've not seen I've seen scratch, like where they've been scratching on a real steep side like that. But I'm also one of those that's like, man, if there's a little bit easier access, a little bit easier way to hunt them, I think I'm going to go the – seems to be – I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah. No, I got to ask, when you're hunting these areas, how do you go about – like, say if you're walking in, and maybe you're walking in an hour plus into a spot, how do you like to position yourself in order to be able to listen to certain areas where you think they're roosted? I mean, in these areas – are they roosted off some of these points, it seems like? Are they kind of roosted more in the little drainages? What does it seem like they're roosting in?
They've
typically?
Always roosted somewhere close to that water.
Okay.
They've always – and when I say water, I'm not talking about big pockets of water. I'm not yep. talking about, like, ponds. I'm just talking about where it's – where you've got, like, these spring heads and stuff like that. Generally, in those areas, they're going to have good roosting trees that I've seen. Up there, up places where I hunt, you have some big rivers, some big creeks, and then you have these fingers that come off the creeks that go into the mountains and stuff. And they always seem to be somewhere in there, but they're always on the steep side, man. They are always on the steep side. So I'm not one to I don't try to get too close. Georgia, how I go into a morning hunt in Georgia and Alabama is a little bit different. You know, Alabama, I try to, you know, use the term get in their bubble or whatever, try to get close as I can without busting them. But in Georgia, I kind of like to sit back a little bit because I sit there and go, man, if they – another reason I do that is because if they're on this tall ridge, okay, and they fly down, they're not just going to fly straight down. They're going to fly way down. So what good is it to be 80 yards from them or even 100 yards when they're going and they're, right over you?
Yeah.
And that's what they do. So I had a really was it year before last? There's a picture. I think Mark's and then put it up on the deal. I found this open meadow. It was like wildflowers, man. It was awesome. And I had been looking at it on a topo, and that's the one I was telling you about. Like it looks like a road cone on a topo, right? And but there was this. I got there like 9 o'clock. I drove up that morning, and I got up there. And there was a river that runs down through there, and it had been raining. You could, man, I'm talking from like 200, you could just hear this river just roaring, man. And so I'm like, man, if a turkey comes in here, I'm not even going to be able to hear him. And so I set up, and like I said, it was kind of this open area, and I could see. I mean, it was one of the few fields or open meadow that they had up there that I found. And I was like, man, this is awesome. This is everything I thought it was going to be. And so I start calling. I can't hear anything. So I was like, man, I'm just going to start gobbling. And, man, I started gobbling, and I was gobbling like three or four times and just hammering. And I look, and almost 200 – I'll have to show you the picture, mm-hmm. but almost well over 200 yards away, there's another mountain that just went straight up. And I look, man, and you ever seen something like in the woods when something's coming towards you and you're sitting there going, man, what is that? And you don't, and it's like, oh, hey, you're turkey hunting. It could be a turkey, you know? Mm-hmm. But they started coming off the side of this mountain. And this mountain, they were three quarters of the way up. So this blew my mind. And they all, and it was 13 of them come off this mountain, man. And I'm watching, it's like B-52s coming off this.
Oh, they're flying.
They're flying off of the mountain into this field, right? I think this probably goes down into one of the, probably the most, the best turkey hunt that I've had up there as far as like most memorable.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there and I'm watching these birds and they're flying over this like they're flying over this I said river, it's more of a creek, but it's a fairly large creek.
Yeah.
And they're flying, they hit down and I start looking and I'm like, my gosh, man. And I start, so I get my binoculars up and I look and I'm like, man, they're all Jakes. Every single one of them are Jakes, you know? And then all of a sudden they all kind of clear and because I can't hear, but all of a sudden I see this fan and I see like that from a distance, you know, like he's gobbling. I can see the side. I can't hear him, but I was like, man, that's a little bit bigger bird. And sure enough, I saw it, man. He was like a stud. And I was like, okay, he's with all these Jakes. So I start gobbling and gobbling and gobbling, and I cut, and then I gobbled again. And, man, I can't describe this. This is why I've started filming more now, because if I would have filmed this, it's unbelievable. But those Jakes started getting in a straight line, and they started running straight towards me. And this gobbler was strutting, running. He was coming in, and he got to like 30 yards, man. And the Jakes, I mean, I had Jakes like 7 feet from me, and they're all trying to figure out what's going on. And I shoot this bird, and, man, birds go everywhere. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, man, dude. So
I got chills. That gave me chills.
But I sat there, and I looked, and it took longer to come down the mountain than the hunt. And I'm sitting there going, what in the world just happened, man? I could not believe that. Like, I was like, man, he's a brother from another mother to me, his name is Chuck. But I was like, man, if Chuck would have been here with me on this would have been something that, like, because it's – I don't know how to describe that, but, man, I mean, like, literally, they were just flying off that mountain, and they come soaring into that, and it was unbelievable. And I was like,
how far were they flying, do you think? If you had it, like, just roughly guess, you think that they were coming in?
I'm telling you, listen, and I know Doc Chamberlain and all these guys that they can live in on science, and they say, well, however far birds, I swear it seemed like they flew for 200 yards, man. But I know it wasn't, but it just seemed that way because they were so far up on that hill. I guess if they're up here and they're flying straight down, it could be a couple hundred yards, several hundred yards. But, it looked like planes landing, man. I just never seen anything like that. It was cool. Unbelievable, man.
Now, you've mentioned this a few times in the podcast, and we've got to talk about this. This is a very big portion of the podcast that listeners you need to take note on, is how you implement gobbling with like your calling sequence and having a tremendous amount of success with gobbling.
He has trouble with his words.
That's okay.
No, but when did you figure out gobbling? Like, how did you figure out gobbling was like a legitimate opportunity for a calling sequence that you could have, you could make it work? And then when did you start having, more and more success using it?
This is going to sound so like that's it. Like, when I started gobbling, they were leaving hens. I remember the first time I gobbled at one, he left the hen, and the hen's chasing him. And I'm like, and I'm not, listen, I'm not saying that I could get on stage and gobble with these guys. It's not no extraordinary gobble, but it works, you know. But, like, it would be, you get a bird that's hung up, and he's gobbling. And he's gobbling. You're like, man, I've called to him, and he's hung up. I love that's the famous words of turkey hunter, hung up, right? And I'm like, I got to thinking about it one day. I was like, birds are like hot tempered teenage boys a lot of times. Okay, so if you get somebody that's there sitting there hollering, well, if this guy says something, being smart, if he says the right thing, it's going to be a fight. And so I was sitting there. I mean, this bird just – I was – you know, when I first started doing it, it was actually in Greensboro. And this bird had been giving me fits all season. And I you know, it's not like deer I know you could beat. But I'm telling you, this was the same bird. This was in his spot. I couldn't do anything, man. I could never get him to commit in there. And so finally he started doing it. And I was like, well, by God, I'm going to gobble back at you. It was less than a minute. That hunt was over. I mean, and so I don't think anybody else should do this. I don't think anybody that turkey hunts should gobble. No, but you know, you hear about how, like, when the Hank call was out,
yeah,
you know, how
yeah.
many people were successful with that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, I couldn't do it. I called it the Hank call because there's not a whole lot of calls that I'm not able to run. It's a passion. Outdoors, why I'm making a living doing it. I love outdoors. I love everything about it. But I was like, man, I can't do this. It is embarrassing, man. I was like, you know, how does this rep that don't even turkey hunt, he's being able to do it. How am I not, you know? But anyway, but that Greensboro hunt, I was like, okay. So I was sitting there going, okay, man, I gobbled, kind of got a little big head. I was all excited. I'm telling you, man, I'm looking now the past probably 7 years. And I'm not saying that I don't yelp or I don't, you know, use the turkey call to yeah. like most people, but I've had guys sit there and go with me and they go, are you not going to call? And I'm like, just let the woods liven up a little bit. Hear one gobble and then I gobble.
Right back at him.
Right back at him. And then I'll do a real light tree yelp or something, or a real light yelp. And it worked. I'm telling you, it's on, man.
And you just got one on a mouth call?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just on a mouth call.
How hard is it to learn how to do that? I've never tried.
So, on a mouth
on a mouth like, call, yeah.
You talking about call on a mouth call?
Or no, or gobble. Just gobble.
Okay.
On a mouth call.
So, I think it all depends. Everybody's different. I try to I don't know if this goes back to what we were talking about earlier about guitars and stuff, like being like, so got a history with music and everything. And so I've never been able to read music, but I can play things by ear. My ear, even though I can't hear, that sounds funny. Somebody said you literally play by your ear. But I think because I'm able to pick out certain tones and stuff, and I can mimic those sounds. And so I just remember having a mouth call one day and like trying to picture myself trying to, like, the lady sitting in the car next to me at the red light was probably thinking, what is this dude doing? Because I was sitting there, like, literally extending my head out trying to gobble and stuff. And finally, it started sounding decent. So I called a buddy of mine, Gary Holcomb, and I said, I want you to be 100% honest with me, man, because Gary and I, we hunted a lot together, man, and just awesome guy, dude, awesome guy. And but I remember I told him, I said, I want you to be honest with me. I'm on gobble, and I want you to tell me what you think. And he says, oh, my gosh. And when he said that, I was like, I might be onto something right here. You know, if it works, it works. It don't have to sound like it's on stage. But if it works, yeah. Hey, man, run with it. But it has been very successful for me. And I've heard guys say, hey, man, if you're on public land, I don't suggest gobbling and this and that. And I understand why. There's some – you know, there's people out there that, you know, that you don't want to be in the woods with. But where I'm hunting, man, it's been money. That's like last Monday morning. That's the same way that bird came in. I mean, I went in there blind. I hadn't been on. It's sad, man. I'm so busy with ball and everything else that I hadn't been able to go back home. And but it's been, gosh, man, I think it's been 8 or 9 years since I've been on my place.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's been a while. And I went out, and I was like, man, I you know, I don't even know if there's birds in here. So I went to this spot that I've actually killed birds on this tree before. And I was like, okay, hey, it's still here. It's a good spot to listen because I've got swamp, a little bit of rolling hills and everything. And so I was like, man, this would be a good spot. And I thought that I heard a gobble, but I wasn't sure because I hadn't got my walkers in yet, and it was still early. And so I was sitting there, and I was like, man, I think that was a gobble. So I just did a real, real light three, just yep, yep, yep. That's all I did. And I waited about, it wasn't maybe a minute or 2 minutes, and I gobbled hard. And I as soon as I gobbled, then I gobbled again, and that was it. When I did that, a hen come down. She started walk, kind of coming down the road or whatever, and I was like, okay, that's pretty cool, I guess. You know, I'm sitting here, and then all of a sudden, here comes the Volkswagen from the side. I mean, he is just like, bam, and he came in there. Run, you saw the video,
oh, yeah.
And like I very seldom do you see gobblers leaving the hens and the hens chasing the gobblers. Like, I don't see that a lot. I'm not saying they don't do it, but obviously they did because it got on film. But it, like, it's something about that, man. You know, and I've had guys go, well, yeah, if it's a young bird, they probably would work. Man, I've taken some mature gobblers, man. I mean, I agree with Mike. Sometimes it's hard to tell, you know, 2-year-old, 3-year-old bird, stuff like that. But when you're killing, you know, inch and a quarter better, you know, 10-inch beards and stuff, that to me is not a 2-year-old. I think he's a more mature bird. But it has worked, man. I mean, it has worked really well.
So is it one of those things that in a situation, say like when you're mountain hunting, you're saying like in the mountain hunting, you're not necessarily worried about getting close to where they're roosting at. You're just trying to get eyes or ears on them and then trying to figure out, you know, potentially like based off your scouting and the sign of that habitat sure. terrain, where they're going to go to when they fly down. Is that one of those things, like, when they're gobbling the roost, would you gobble back at them, or would you wait a little bit of time after, you know, potentially they've kind of pitched out and then start doing a gobble?
I'm gonna hit them with a gobble, man. I came up there to hunt. I'm like, so, like, but here's what's funny, because I don't have – there's a lot of turkey hunting. Man, there's some dang freaking just awesome, incredible turkey hunters, you know. And I don't have the opportunity to go roost birds. Like, my schedule, you know, I just don't have it. If I'm not at work, I'm at the ball fields or something, you know, and that's like – so I don't really have time to roost birds. So when I go to Georgia, there's no way for me to go. And now, once I'm there, people go, well, man, if you're there, you can roost birds in the afternoons. But, man, I have some incredible afternoon hunts up there too. But if I go in there blind, I'm just getting to where I can hear them. And then try – if one gobbles, I feel like he's close enough, I'm going to gobble and I'm going to give that bird 30 minutes. I'm going to give him 30 minutes after I gobble to try to see if he's going to come in. But like I said, that was early on. Now it's gotten to – I've been hunting up there so long that now those spots that are – you know, it's like I'm hitting spots now after this many years of hunting up there where I've always taken birds. They're always there. They might not be there that day. So then I go over to this spot and I'm kind of hopping around or walking or whatever, but I'm going to strike a bird up there. It's just going to happen. As long as it's not snowing and sleeting. That I ain't never in my life, man.
Yeah.
I was freezing too. And I checked the weather before I went. Everything was supposed to be like in the 60s. And, man, it didn't get over – it was 15, 20-mile-an-hour winds, didn't even get over about 38.
Oh.
And then I didn't have waterproof clothes on, and I – man, it was crazy.
So, real quick, I want you to tell a story real quick, just talking about, like, you know, how hard you're hunting. You mentioned this earlier before we had dinner, talking about this bird you killed, like, at 4:30 in the afternoon, and – maybe got a little sidetracked to kind of where you were at. This is before, you know, I think you might have had Onyx, but I didn't use like the offline feature and all that kind of stuff. But just like how rugged some of these areas are and how far away you can actually get from a truck.
Oh, yeah.
The one where you had to get picked up.
Yeah, that. So I honestly should have hit the little function on there that tells you how far you walked that day. But I started that morning. I got out there I got out of the truck and started walking up. I understand, so like where I'm hunting, it's you have a road or whatever. Where I went in, there's no road. It's just mountains. It's just desolate, just wilderness is all it is, right? And so I had gone up in this area, and there was an area that I had looked at. I was like, man, it's going to take me forever to get there, but I want to hunt it. I'm here. If I'm, you know, my thing is I mean, I ain't got nothing else to do. I'm going to walk. And, man, I had walked, and I'd walked, and I'd got on birds, and it seems like it was a constant. They were in front of me. And it's not like around here, if a bird gets in front of you, you can go down the road and cut them off. And, you know, and so up there, it's like, man, I'm thinking they're on this ridge, but they could have gone the other way, and I'm just going into no man's land, right? But I kept getting on birds, and I was saying, you know, I would get eyesights on them, but there's just wide open woods, and I wouldn't try to overcall because I didn't want to bump them and bust them, and then I'd be upset because, man, you bust birds out there, that's a long walk back, man. And So I was like, man, so I was constantly getting eyes, and so I would take ridges, and I mean, I'm putting in some miles. I mean, it was some serious miles that day. And so it was a little after 4 o'clock, and I came into a spot, and it was one of those things where I was like, man, I'm fixing to, this is it, man. I've either bumped them or something, just I should have either seen them, heard them, or whatever. And then sure enough, so I was like, I'm gonna try it. And man, I gobbled, and then bam, he hit. And I was like, he's close. Like, and when they sound close in the mountains, they're on you. Like, it, because me, I can't, it just, I knew he was close. And but yeah, that's when he came in there, and he made a mistake, and that's when I shot. And I was like, man, I cannot believe that just happened. But by the time I realized where I was at, I was like, man, I'm going to be walking in the dark for a couple of hours in the mountains, and I have no cell phone service. My cell phone's about dead. So I need to get to one thing that I have learned up there, and especially with OnX and stuff. Now, I do have a Garmin now. That's pretty cool. But at the time, I didn't, you know. But I would get to where I would sit there and say, okay, I'd keep my eyesight on a point on a big ridge or whatever. And as long as I could kind of remember that, walk in one direction, and then I would come out or whatever. But I knew that there was a road. At some point, I was going to hit this road. And so I come down the mountain. And that was that one. It was so steep. I was sliding and everything. I get all the way down, and I'm like, man, I've got to get some water. And I went to take my gun off my shoulder, and there was no gun on my shoulder. And I'm like, and I start patting my other side, like, you know, yeah, we all do the same thing. Yeah. Like, I never carry my gun on my right shoulder. It's always on my left. And I went, well, I'd have felt it fell off, you know, coming down the mountain. I was like, oh, man, I realized that about all the way at the top, I was like, well, I better use the restroom, you know. And so it was still up there. And is this what you were talking about,
right?
Oh,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And so I'm sitting here going, man, and when it takes you just shy of 30 minutes to come down a mountain before you get into a flat area or to – that's a long way down, and that's a lot of like a lot of zigzagging. And there were certain points I was just like, man, I can slide, and I'm gonna hold this, you know, just kind of ease down on my butt or whatever. And then I tried to get up, and man, my leg, I've been walking all day, man. And so I was like, man, there's no way. I cannot believe I just did this stupid move, man. What a rookie. I mean, who leaves their gun at the top of a mountain? Like, what kind of, you know? And I'm just like, man, I'm mad at myself. I'm like, this is the kind of stuff I try to tell my boys about responsibility. You know, it's like, hey, be responsible. Like, no, you know, cut the lights off this. You know, didn't think I'd have to ever tell anybody, hey, don't forget your gun in the woods, you know. But so I go back up this mountain, man, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to find my gun. And anyway, long story short, after over an hour of walking up a mountain, I'm just like, man, there's no way. It's starting to get a little – it's not dark by any means, but it's getting close. I mean, you know, I'm like, man, this is going to be bad because, you know, I've got a headlamp. It's probably – heck, I probably left it at the bottom of the mountain, you know. So I look, man, and I kid you not, and it's a God thing because I'm sitting there going, man, I cannot – there's no way. Every tree in here looks the same. Every ridge looks the same. And I just look, and it not 10 yards from me, that gun is propped up against that tree. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, man. And I was about to cry, man. I was like, I cannot believe that this happened. So then I come back down the mountain, long story short, and I'm walking down this road, and it's starting to get dark. And then I see headlights coming. And, of course, out there, man, I've actually, this is no joke, one of these places that I hunt, I was told by somebody that is from that area who was a retired law enforcement. He said that when most people will call, if there's an issue up there, like if they get a call, Sheriff's Department don't go up there. And it's because like, they're like, man, we're not, that's too, they just don't, I don't know how to say it, man. They don't want to deal with the people. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? I mean, there's some bad – like, I've talked to people up in that area, and they're like, man, don't leave your truck, man. You could come out in your truck and be gone. But luckily, I've never had no issues. Mm-hmm. So I get these headlights coming. I'm sitting here going, man, I'm kind of nervous. But, man, it was a super guy. His name was Chris, man, and I still talk to him now. But he's like, man, you all right? I'm like, yeah, man. He's like, man, where you parked at? And I told him, and he said, man, hop in. And, man, it was like a 22-minute ride, dude. in a truck to where my truck was at. So I had covered four major ridges that day. Kind of like, you know, you had, like when you're in the mountains, you sit there and you count ridge. That's kind of how I did that day, which was crazy to do for a turkey, but I was more proud of that turkey than anything, man. I mean, I just like being out in the mountains, man. I'm like, you know, everybody always talks about the bear up there and stuff. I'm like, which we've had situations.
Well, I'm going to bring that real quick.
I want to talk about the gobble thing a little bit more. With the gobble, are you always doing that in conjunction with like some cuts or something, or are you just straight gobbling at a turkey?
Most of the time, I really and truly, I don't do a whole lot of cutting with it. Every once in a blue, like, so sometimes what I'll do is you talk about like a sequence or something like that. If I'm just sitting there, I'm like, man, I just need to get something. So I'll do like three, like yelps, like just a yep. And then I'll call, you know, and when I do that, I just sit and wait. And that seems to be a pretty good deal. If I get him to answer, you know, a lot of people say, hey man, if he answers, just shut up. I want to piss him off. I want to make sure, because I don't have a whole lot of time to hunt. So I want to make sure, like, if he gobbles, if I can hear him gobble and I can cut him off, I'm going to do it.
With a gobble. Yeah. That's the difference. It's not cutting him off with the yelp, cutting him off with the gobble.
And it's funny. And I don't know if they're more mad, but it seems like every bird that has come in like that, his head has been solid white. Not like a red, white, and blue, like solid white. I don't know if that means anything, because I don't know, but I've noticed, because even the other day we was talking about it, and I was telling the guy at the store, he came in today, he said I had that I sold him a gobble box that Eddie Salters does, and I told him, I said, man, it's very simple to do. Get you some rubber bands around this thing, you can shake it. If you do it inside, it doesn't sound as great, but it can, man, in the woods it does sound like that. And he said, man, I did that. He said, that bird came in. He said, man, when he came in, he said, I was thinking, man, you know, having a red, white, blue head and everything. He said, it was solid white. I've never seen a bird with a solid white. He's new to turkey hunting. He said, I've never seen one solid white. When he said that, I was like, you know what? Now that you say that, so it's not like I've always known that. That happened today, and I'm sitting there going, man, I'm looking back at a lot of these birds when I've done that, and they're – there might not be anything to that, but something, obviously there's something that might be. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a bow tech who likes a turkey hunt. And I've seen that. And so I don't know if a turkey's head's more white, if he's more mad, if he's red, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, see, Andrew always says, because we watched one Saturday, he's, oh man, his head's white. That's not a good thing.
No, I didn't say that.
I thought you said something about his head white.
No, I liked it. I've saw the same thing. So when their head's white, that's a good thing in my book.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Like if his head is like red or something, like straight red, like that usually means like I scared him, it seems like. Like, I've seen a lot of redheads running off through the woods. I never see a white head running off through the woods.
That's
like, somebody's going to be sitting there going, this guy don't know nothing about turkey hunting. He's talking about white heads, but I'm just like, don't get me wrong, man, I've had birds strutting into red, white, and blue and everything, but I'm just saying, it seems like the birds that really have come in there just violent. I mean, violent, just has had that white head, man.
In Georgia one time, I was hunting a WMA, and it was a slow morning, a rainstorm had come through, there wasn't anything going on. I didn't hear a turkey all morning, and it got to be like 9:45, and I had to leave. I was in Auburn at the time. I had to go to class, and I had like 30 more minutes. I'm like, I'm just going to throw the kitchen sink at him. And so I start yelping. I cut it off with Jake yelps, and I do this the most obnoxious like 5-minute calling sequence, just like yip, 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 bow, 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 back and forth, back and forth. And I sit there for like 3 minutes, and there's just nothing. And then all of a sudden, pow, like over the next ridge, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. And I turn, and he gobbles like three more times. It ended up being two birds, but they're just like coming in, like gobbling. I'm like, holy crap. So I run down across the creek and get on their ridge. And I think I called one more time, and they cut me off. And it was two birds gobbling, and they were running and gobbling, and they wrapped around the hill, and white heads, both of them. And I shot one of them and racked a shell and put it on the other one, And this is right when I started hunting Georgia. I'm like, wait, can I shoot two in a day here? And so I just let him go. But I was like, oh, I could have doubled. But it's all right. I got one.
Yeah,
but
I think they changed it now. I think it's just one bird now.
So, yeah, but that was the whiteheads, dude. I mean, like.
And there again, there may not be anything to it. It could be just totally coincidence or whatever. But when he said that today, I'm like, you know, and you think, here's the thing. Like, this was a guy that has not turkey hunted a whole lot. And he said something, and I'm sitting there going, man, I've been seeing that. And I think, too, is any kind of hunter, a lot of times if you really just kind of sit back and relive that hunt and play kind of like a play-by-play and, like, store that in the back of your mind, you start realizing it's like, oh, wait a minute, this starts to click. This starts to click. And, I mean, and so that's another thing with turkey hunting, man. Like, I've been turkey hunting since I was 9. And I'm 41 now, and I know there's guys that have, I mean, been doing it a lot longer. But, like, one thing about turkey hunting is every year it's something that you learn or something that you go, well, gosh, that's been going on for the past 8 years. I didn't even think about that, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, I think there's something to that. But that's
so one hunt that comes to mind, we're talking about gobbling, that comes back. I had a lunchbox call that I used for a while, and then I accidentally one day I shot a bird and I stepped on it and destroyed it on accident because I threw it down next to me. Anyways,
ouch.
And but I could gobble on that box call really well, fairly well. And there was a hunt me and Andrew were hunting in some Alabama piece of bubbling, and we were like chasing some birds around all morning. They weren't playing, and all of a sudden we get down this freaking bottom at the head of this slough, this cypress slough. And I'm like, I'm going to try to gobble. Because, like, we had heard a bird down there, like, roosted down there at that time. And there's a big saddle and a ridge up next to it. And I gobbled on it. And we might have gobbled a couple times.
Oh, we gobbled a bunch of times.
We gobbled.
We were goofing off at this point.
And then all of a sudden, we're like, well, we just turned to start walking back down the bottom. And we didn't make it 50, 60 yards. And come over the top of the ridge. Bah, bah, bah. And I'm like, was it one or two birds?
It was two birds. We're like, hit the deck.
And they come running off the ridge, dude, like psychopaths. And like, we were idiots because we should have sat there. And we were like, by that time, we had walked down the bottom, probably 50 yards from where we had just called at. I mean, it's probably a couple minutes later, but we were kind of moving quickly. And we were just inside like a little privet thicket or some kind of little thick stuff. And you could see them. But, like, we're like, oh, crap. So we're trying to hit the deck and, like, try to move. And they get down to literally where I was calling at. And they're strutting and gobbling their heads off in that same spot.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, and then we bump the freaking birds trying to get
exciting,
it off.
That's exciting, though, man.
And I'm like, hold, and again, Andrew, why don't we do that no more? What's going on?
I don't know, man. I don't know. that was fun. I gobble from time to time. We ain't do it because Jacob ain't hunted in a while.
We should have done it this weekend. What are you doing, man?
We should have done it this weekend. I ain't going to lie, for real. I considered doing it, but I just didn't do it. I can't do it on a mouth call real good. I can do it on a box call okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Woodhaven reel hen, and I can gobble pretty good on that one. But those, you mentioned a Hank gobble call earlier.
Yeah.
Dude, I'd never seen one of those, and I was turkey hunting with Cy Colley one time. And he whipped that joker out, and I thought he was going to hoot or something. And he's like, pow! And I was like, whoa!
Dude, they sound good. If you can find one,
sounds good.
Well, if you can run it, it sounds great.
We had my buddy Gary I was talking mm-hmm. about earlier, he had one, and we were in Greensboro one year. And, man, it was freezing cold, and it started raining. And it was the last time me and him were going to be able to hunt, I think, for that season. And, man, it was just cold, 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 cold. And he got that hane out, and he started doing it. And, man, it was immediate, man. We had two birds on top of us. And the way we – and this is on – this, you know, I have to say it was the guide's fault. It was me. Because we're in this clear cut, and mm-hmm. it's off of this hill. So this big mountain's coming off this hill in this clear cut. And there is no cover in this clear. It's a fresh cut, clear cut. But where they were – where the trucks were making their circles and grabbing all the logs and all that stuff, there was a brush pile right there. And I was set up right there. And so I was like, man, I'm going to put this strutting decoy over in this – I'm gonna use the strutter because I was like, man, this will be cool, man. This will be an awesome hunt. So I put it out there to where those birds, if they come off the top, they can see it. Well, Gary was tucked in up under, like, right next to the road, but it was like a ledge. So he had about 5 foot of ledge above him. Well, he's hitting this hank, and these two birds, and I can see him, and I can see Gary. And I'm sitting here going, they're right above you. They're gobbling their heads off. It's raining, and he's over there, and he's moving. He's hitting this hank call, and they're right above him. They can't see him. And I'm like, And he, because so anyway, so they ended up coming down the road. Well, they never came in, I guess, the guy, for whatever reason. But man, they kept going across this clear cut. So I go over there, and he's like, "Man, where were they at?" And I was like, "Dude, they were right above your head." And he goes, "Well, I was wondering why you didn't shoot." I was like, "Well, I mean, I like we shooting above your head, but like they were right there, man." Well, they get across this clear cut, and he starts hitting that thing, and they gobbled every single time he hit it. Now they wanted to be somewhere besides there for some whatever reason, didn't work out. But man, he could run that pretty good, man. And he's an incredible duck hunter anyway, so he can something about that call.
Yeah, because it's a tube call. It's yeah, like, I mean, it's a tubular design. It looks like kind of like a grunt call slash duck call. It's kind of interesting because I looked at one because I know Si talked about it, and we had another guy talk about it on the podcast, and I went to look at them on eBay. And
$300.
They're expensive, man.
Yeah, and we sold them at the store for $49.
Why doesn't another company come out with one?
They're probably like a patent issue or something like that.
I can't say.
Okay.
I think there's a chance that will, in a different form, come back.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of legalities.
Gotcha.
And too many hands in the project. But anyway,
gotcha.
That's all I'm gonna say. I don't want to be. I don't want somebody to take me out.
There's a lot more that I want to talk about, but we're going to have to get you back on because we ain't got time to cover all of it.
All good, man.
But
dude, we ain't talking the pig story? No, we ain't talking the bear story?
I'm saying we got to end on, I think, the pig story.
Should we tell you the pig or the... I don't know. The pig story is good. The bear story is good, too. I don't know.
Pig story makes me look like an idiot.
The pig story makes you, like, look back and, like, just like, what did I do this? The bear story is sketchy as hell, though. You tell the bear story, there might not be any guys hunting in North Georgia. So, I don't know. I mean, the bear story is not too long, but talk about the bear story for us. I think we'll end on the hog story because, I mean, the bear story is not too terribly long, but like the thing is, so one thing about you is, you know, you've been also bear hunting in the fall as well. Okay, and it's kind of funny. It's like bear hunting in the fall, seeing some small bears, stuff like that. But it's like in the springtime, you see some of these magnums.
I'm seeing some, man, Georgia. If anybody at the state of Georgia would just give me 1 year permit, me only, to just go and bear hunt this spot, because nobody. That's the one thing. One of the game wardens in that area, he's like, you are the only person that I know that really does bow hunt up here. He said, because it's not a popular spot. It's not in all those places, but like, it's just not a place where bears are being killed, but there's big bears in there, but it's just, they're hard to hunt. But anyway, but yeah. So him and Naomi, they're good friends of ours down here. He's like a brother to me. They're actually from Columbiana. Anyway, they lived in Georgia, and so we were going to go turkey. I said, man, we'll come up there and stay with y'all. We're going to go turkey hunt and everything. And so Troy and I, we go out that morning, and where his place was, this particular WMA, this wasn't a national forest. This was a WMA, was over there close to his house. So you could walk out. It was 22 miles of woods to the next like road from where he was at. So it was really kind of cool, man. And so we go out there, man. We walked. Man, it wasn't too far of a walk, about 30, maybe 35 minutes that morning we walked to get to this spot. And it was just kind of laid out. So you had a old spring head. There again, we're talking about spring heads and stuff. So it had all these rock. It was real mossy. And you could tell, like, when it rains in there, it's real pretty. It looks like a big creek or something. But anyway, you had this huge mountain across from us that had it was a big mountain, but it just gradually went up. So we're set up on this other side watching this side because, like I said, it hadn't got green a whole lot. So I told Troy, no, we're walking in there. Let me rephrase this. Walking in there, we came across some scat, man. It looked like something out of a cow pasture, man. I mean, it was like, gosh, dog, man, that's fresh, you know. And he's like, yeah, you know, I know they're in here. We've got pictures of them and stuff. So we set up, and I go up to the top of this tree. He set up kind of beside me, maybe a six yards from me. And I said, man, I'm going to back off of you. I'm going to let you watch this ridge. I said, because if a turkey comes, I feel like I think he's going to come right down through here. This is where I think we need to be. So I go up to the top, and I'm like, man, I got to use the restroom before we go. I was about to explode, man. So I've been drinking way too much water that morning. And so I use the restroom, and I get down, and I'm kind of like on a, like a, not really like a treetop, but there's a stump behind me and a cedar. So I felt like I was kind of tucked in. So I was like, oh, this is cool. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, I look over the top of the mountain. We had been there 5-10 minutes, man, and I see this black blob coming off the mountain. And I was like, from that distance, you know, everybody says, what do you mean you can't tell the difference between a turkey and a bear? But when you just see black, you don't know what it is, right? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, man, this bird's coming down. This is fixing to happen. We hadn't been here. Note that this is going to be Troy's moment, man. And this bird's working its way down. And then all of a sudden, man, and it's not like one of those things where you go, man, there's no way he spotted me. You're like, there's no, but all of a sudden, man, he tucks in. He starts making some, he don't fly off, but he starts getting it the other way. So Troy turns, kind of looks at me, and I was like, dude, I don't know, man. What? And we look back up on the top of the mountain, man, and these two bear. Now, granted, I didn't know what it was when I first saw it, that it was a turkey. And I said, oh my God. I said, man, those are two big bear, man. And he's like, so we're watching them, and they're walking down this mountain, you know, and they're coming, the exact way the turkey was coming down. And before we knew it, these bear were right at 20 yards in front of us on the other side of this spring. And Troy is in a ghillie suit, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, man, this is incredible. Why don't these bears? I mean, I put a lock on 30 yards from where we're hunting back during bear season, because I'm like, there's sign everywhere back here, right? And so they come walking across, and they cross next to Troy at about 10-15 yards, and Troy is just sitting there like with his eyes looking at me, and his, it looked like, man, they were like 8-inch balls, man. They were just huge. And I was like, man, just, man, this is awesome. And I'm sitting here, I'm trying to film it, you know, it's like, this is so great, this is awesome. So the larger bear was behind this other bear, and it wasn't like a cub. I mean, this the other bear, I think it would have been 150, 160-pound bear. So it gets towards where Troy is, and then it just takes a 90-degree and starts walking the complete opposite way. Well, the big bear comes in and starts walking, and it's kind of like, so try to picture where we're sitting right here. It's walking at an angle behind my left shoulder. And I'm watching him, and he gets up there to the tree that I peed on. And I, whether this really happened or if it didn't, I swear I heard chomping. Like, have y'all ever heard a pig chomp?
Yeah, popping teeth.
So I hear that noise, and I'm sitting there going, I didn't think that bear did that. I didn't know if it, but I'm still to this day, I say that that's what happened, because that's the noise I heard. And I'm watching this, and the demeanor of this bear changed. Like, it went to hair up on the back type deal. He wasn't just walking. And he turns at that tree, and he is walking down. Now, at this point, he is 21 yards from me. And I'm like, he's walking towards me. And Troy can't see what's going on, because Troy has got his back turned. He doesn't know. And all of a sudden, I said, Troy, he's coming. He's coming. And so, like, and when that happens, the video, everything falls off this tripod. Everything goes blank. This bear charges me, and he stops at probably, I'm going to say 8 yards, because I could probably jump and kick him from where I'm at. And that son of a gun pounced on that ground like that, man. And I started screaming. Now, this is what's funny, okay? Everybody's sitting here going, this guy, what? All right, so we were talking about horses, you know, when you're training a horse, throw up your hand. Everybody says, if a bear ever charges you, you know, holler at it or whatever. And so I've even said to myself, there's no way, if a bear's charging me, I'm shooting or something. But man, I was like, man, I can't believe this is happening. And so when he charged in on me and he stopped at that 8 yards, man, I jumped up and I start screaming. And I'm like, God, I'm making as much noise and stuff. And dude, I'm getting chills now.
I got chills right when he said he's charging.
When he charged in and he stopped, He lifted up and like come back down and hit. Not like he's like a grizzly hitting. But he just bounced. He bounced and came down. And Troy started hollering. Troy started banging the tree with his gun. And this bear kind of just turns nonchalantly and just starts walking back and then stops and is sitting there doing this at me.
Kind of head bobbing back and forth.
Kind of head bobbing back and forth. And I'm like, okay, he did a bluff charge, but I think a bluff charge is like more than 20 yards. I mean, bluff charge, man, he was enough to where he could have swatted me. I mean, it just... Dude, it was unbelievable, man. And so the bear finally, it turned and just walked off. Well, it got up to that tree, and it turned back around again and looked. Ears kind of lay back on him. And, man, after that, I couldn't stand up, dude. I started shaking, and I was like, oh, my God, that was awesome. And Troy was like, dude, I'm out. We're out of here. We're gone. I'm done. And see, everybody, I never take a pistol with me. Ever. Everybody was always like, man, when you're in the mountains, you better have a pistol and everything. And then to this day, I still don't. And I have people ask me, you know, why didn't you try to shoot? And I'm like, man, because the way the laws are and everything. And that's one thing, like, I really, really, really tried to do everything textbook. And I want my first bear here in Georgia to be, not because he mauled me, you know, but like, I want to be able to say I hit him with a bow, not because he came at me, but. I won't never forget that, and it's one of those things, man. It's like, man, you know, Troy, we talk about that all the time, and he's like, and because I tell him, I was like, man, I'm glad you were with me. He goes, why you say that? And I was like, well, man, because nobody'd believe that. You know what I'm saying? Like, because, I mean, I've had some really crazy things happen in the woods, man, and it's like there's certain people you look back that could tell stories and stuff like that, and my dad, you know, talks all the time, like, man, I can't believe that happened, this, that type thing. But, man, I will never forget that. And he was a bruiser bear. Like, he was a big, big bear. Still the biggest bear I've seen in Georgia. Unfortunately, it wasn't bear season. But, man, that's when it got real. I mean, and seeing that it was that at that point, for something about it, though, I was like, man, this is what I love. This is what I love. This is why I love the mountains, man. That ain't going to happen in Pea Ridge. You know, it ain't going to happen over, you know, it ain't going to happen in Columbiana. You know, that's something that you'll never, like, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to tell about it. But it's just stuff like that. Just, man, I love it, man. It just, it was awesome.
That's crazy.
Oh, man.
But Troy, he literally, he told me, he said, I'm done. I don't care about turkey. I want to get back to the cabin. And so it has been, honestly, man, some of the things like that has happened through the years up there. I actually have talked to people that they said they will not, whether they're deer hunting, bear hunting, whatever, they don't go in the dark. They wait till it can, even turkey hunting.
I know a few mountain hunters that are like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessarily because of just that, but I know some other mountain hunters, like, I'm not going in during dark and going in during gray light, kind of easing my way in and kind of hunting their way in through, you know, throughout the morning. Now, how does that look? Now, you know, you talk about the bears, and that's kind of the crazy thing. It's like running through those bears like that. We've got to talk and kind of finish out on this this hog story, which is a good life lesson for a lot of people, I think, listening here. So one thing about the, you know, North Georgia is a lot of those places have a lot of pigs.
There's a lot of pigs.
So
I've got a lot of fish. When the first year Mandy wanted to go up there to hunt, we had some monster boars in front of us at like 40 yards, and she said, "Can I shoot?" I was like, "No, you're not shooting at 20 at them." It's like, but yeah, there's a lot of pigs up there. So there's a place up there that I call Fern Gully, and the reason I call that, it's just this really, it's an huge open meadow, man, and it's just it's unbelievable, man. I mean, me and Chuck and Troy found this place together, and we all at the same, we I said, this is like Fern Gully. So we've just called it Fern Gully, right? And I've taken several birds in this particular area. So I was like, man, it was kind of a, I think it was middle of the day. I can't remember what time. No, it wasn't middle of the day. It was late afternoon, because I remember why I had to jet out of there. But I'm sitting there and I'm glassing, you know, and I'm tucked in kind of like there's these dirt mounds where the bear have, there's bear trails all up through there. So you got like this open meadow, and then there's a lot of flat ground, because you're on this particular mountain, you're kind of up as far as it's going to go. Now, you got places around you that go up, but this place kind of teeters out, and it's just open. And So I'm sitting there glassing, and all of a sudden, when I came in on the high side, and I glassed everything, trying to make sure if I didn't see anything, and all of a sudden, I see something black, and I'm like, I didn't see that when it came in, maybe because it was on the low end side that comes in on this old logging road, and so I was like, man, I don't know, it's black, what is this? And I'm glassing it, and I'm glassing it, and I'm glassing it, and I can't figure it out, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, man, I don't know, and man, I hadn't heard a bird, it was just one of them afternoons, so I'm like, man, I need to start walking. I've got quite a walk back to the truck. So I get up, and I'm like, well, I'm going to go check this thing out, see what this is, you know. So I, with my binoculars, now I'm like 100 yards and 80 yards, and I'm getting closer, and I'm like, man. And so now in the binoculars, I can see there's flies all around this thing. And I'm like, honestly, even at that distance, I couldn't tell if it was a bear or if it was a pig, but I was like, it's one of the two. I knew it was one of those, and I was like, man, I don't know what this thing
was. Was this before or after your last bear encounter that you just mentioned?
Oh, this has been like 3, 4, 5 years later. I mean, this has okay. been way down the road, right? Okay. But obviously not long enough.
That's why I bring it up. I'm like, yeah. Like curiosity's going to kill Robbie.
Yeah. But, you know. Yeah. This cat don't get 9 lives. I only got 1 left. But so... Anybody that's going to that hears this, understand, like, I am a very common sense guy. Like, these are things that, anyway, let me get to the thing. So, I start walking up, and I'm like, oh, daggum, man, that's a pig. You know, that's a daggum boar, you know. Now, it wasn't, I'm going to say it may have been 150-pound boar. It was like, you know, it was one of those boars, man, that I kind of like the ones I like, man. They're kind of skinny, but they got real good cutters, right? Yeah. And it's laying there, and it's got it. So I'm walking up, and its back is towards me. So he's laying there, feet going the other way, and there's flies all over the thing. And I'm like, man, this son of a gun. And I'm I'm right here with binoculars looking, making sure he ain't breathing or nothing like that. So I was like, man. I said, well, that's cool. I got a dead pig. So I was like, man, I got to get a picture of this. And I said, well, I better get this rock. So I grabbed this little rock, man, and I throw it over there at it. And it don't do nothing. It is dead. I'm like, okay, I'm good. So I kind of relax a little bit because you know you're kind of tense. You're like, if this pig's alive or whatever, what you know, I'm by myself. Well, I go to get my gun and I'm like shifting around and I drop my phone. And when I drop my phone, he might not have liked it. He didn't care about a rock, but an iPhone falls. It pissed him off, and he jumps up. And when he jumped, when I say jump, I swear to this day, he levitated. Like, this pig got up so fast and turned. And I'm sitting here going, man, like, I thought he was dead. Because there's
how
flies
close are
every,
you?
To the corner.
Okay.
Corner of the wall.
So, like, 8 feet.
Yeah, eight, 10 feet.
Corner of the wall.
Eight
I mean,
feet,
I'm, at the, I'm at the point, like, even at this distance, like, well, my cell phone hit the ground. It jumps up. And when it did, it spun around, and it is just chomp. And I'm like, and so I, all of a sudden, man, I just, here I am. I got my old 870. All right. I've got 5 shells on me. That's all I got. I got 5 shells. I shoot. Boom. Hit him. He rolls. And I'm like, oh, man, that was close. He gets back up. I shoot again, and he rolls. Now, the TSS, I know it's bad stuff, but apparently this pig is badder. So I'm sitting there like, oh, my gosh, man. So the third time I shoot this thing, it falls down, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Well, I'm like, well, I got to go back and get my phone because I dropped my phone. I got to go get my phone.
And you're, man, my heart, you're backpedaling all that
I'm
happening.
Backpedaling, man. I'm like, yeah, I'm backpedaling. It's like a scene off of a movie with somebody with a pump shotgun and just boom, you know. And, man, it's like I'm like, I cannot believe that just happened. And now here's the thing before I go on the other side of things. I always tell – these are things that you tell your kids, like – you don't go up to a dead animal and poke the bear. You know, you don't poke the pig. You know, and I'm sitting here going, I know that. And it's not like I went up to it and tried to kick it. It was just like I'd done everything I knew to do. I mean, I chunked a rock at it, and it didn't move. And so it gets up. It's chomping. So I've got 3 shots in him. Well, he starts coming back. And now there's enough time in between us to where I'm like, I'm waiting for him to – I'm not going to shoot at far distance, but he's coming at me. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I shoot again. Well, when I shot him on the 4th shot, he fell down and starts just making all god-awful racket. Well, I look across, and coming off the other mountain, I don't know how many because I didn't keep up, but I know it was more than 15. And there was a boar coming down that mountain that was, I mean, huge, big freaking boar, man. And they come down, and I'm like, man, I've only got one shell left, and there's all these pigs, and I've done pissed their compadre off. And I'm like, I'm not panicking, but now I'm like, boy, you're in a pickle. Like it kind of got real. It's like, man, this I might not see my boys. Like, that thought came to mind because it was, like, the way this howl happened, man. And so I'm like, kind of run. I start running. Like, I run the other way.
Grab your phone.
Well, I did grab my phone. Yeah. Yes, I grabbed my phone. I'm taking off or whatever. And all of a sudden, those pigs started attacking that pig that was on the ground. When you're up there and all of those pigs and everything, and I'm telling you, that was the most eerie sound that I could hear in my life, man. And so I had one shell, and I get back to the truck, and I'm just like, man, I can't believe that happened. Like, so it's not like I went up to some dead animal and started poking it, but dude, I was like, man, I don't care if I see a squirrel out there on its side. I ain't messing with it, man. Not after that. That shook me up, man. So, but yeah, that was quite a thing. Of course, everybody's like, well, he should have had a pistol on you. I'm like, I know, but that's just more weight, man. When you're walking those mountains, it's as light as you can get, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
but yeah, come go with me. It'd be fun, you know.
Hey, man, we're getting charged by bears, pigs.
Yeah. But yeah, it's but there again, like I said, man, it's things like that. And everybody said, man, there's no way I'd go back. Man, there's just so many things that I've experienced up there. And it's just like, I mean, those two things were, yeah, they'll shake you up a little bit, but it's like, man, I experienced it. I saw it. You know, it happened. So it's, if something ever does get a hold of me up there and they find me, that's y'all all know where Fern Gully is. And everybody, I finally found a spot.
Oh, my God.
I told my boys that my boys, because it's so far back to get there and everything, but I told them, I said, I think, you know, I said, I'm going to have to show y'all where that's at one day. I said, that might be where I want my ashes at or something like that. You know, I started laughing, and my oldest one said, I really don't think I want to walk that far. And I was like, but yeah.
Well, the charter that helicopter in there and
yeah,
drop you out of it. No, yeah, it's crazy. But I mean, again, kind of gets back to the whole mountain hunting and just like the experiences that can be had and that kind of stuff. And it's just, you talk about some super wild places.
Yeah.
Even in the you know, the Southeast, it's just crazy. And of course, this year you'll be hunting is what, Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee, along with Alabama and Mississippi.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Getting busy after it.
Yeah. North Carolina's going to be new to me this year. But from when I went up in February, it should be promising. I'm pretty excited about that. The Tennessee place, so that's a whole, you know, I talked to the stories about that, man. That's on me, man. Gosh, man, that was goof, you know, that was a miss. And, the other one I would have to say is about knowing where you're at, but, had some mountain bikers that, and I didn't even know there was a mountain bike trail there, but apparently there was, but, the only two bikers and me on that mountain that day, but, anyway, the birds were there, and so I look forward to it, but we'll see.
Absolutely. Awesome. Andrew, what you got?
That's all I got, man. Well, I got a lot more, but I'm not going to make this a 3-hour podcast.
Okay. Where are we sitting at right now?
Hour 31.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Awesome.
We used to do like 3.5-hour podcasts all the time. They're fun. I like it. But then we're like, you know what? We could just get two episodes out of this.
Instead of
all this work for one episode.
But, Robbie, I got to say, I appreciate you coming by, man, and share some stories. And hopefully guys can kind of go out there. And, you know, like you said, you know, maybe, you know, not everybody needs to be out there gobbling, you know, save some turkeys for the rest of us. But, you know, it'd be interesting to kind of see if we get any listener success stories from people that learn how to gobble. I want to learn how to do it on the box or on the mouth call. And you watch some more videos. I know Shane Simpson's got a video on his YouTube channel how to do it, but try, you know, work on the box call and implement that a little bit this season. And it's one of those things like, you know, do it safely. You know, I wouldn't do it on public land if I had a decoy, especially like a Jake decoy or like any kind of male turkey decoy. Definitely wouldn't do it. But just being very aware of your surroundings and, you know, are you in a remote area or are you in an area where there's probably other hunters that can hear you? Use some common sense while using it. But again, it seems like it can be extremely effective, like how you've used it.
So. Definitely.
People, a lot of times with calls too, man, a lot of guys, like when they come to the store, we talk and they're like new to turkey hunting. They're like, I need this. And, you know, I tell them, man, the only way that you're going to learn is to get out there, but don't feel like you got to be perfect, man. And you hear that. Y'all have had guys on here that I've listened, you know, that said the same thing, but it's so true, man. And it's like, man, knowing the terrain, knowing your woods, knowing, you know, knowing that area, and just like I said, like when I just try to put yourself as a, try to make yourself think, like, what would he do? You know what I'm saying? Why? What would that turkey try to do? If I was a turkey and I was going to come in to check it out, what would I do? So maybe it takes off ticking them off a little bit or something. But they don't, like on the gobble thing, you don't have to have a perfect gobble being on stage. But if it works, it works. And mine has, it has worked.
So. Awesome. Perfect. Well, appreciate everybody listening to the podcast. And again, Robbie, appreciate you coming by and spending some time with us. It's been an awesome
Thanks
conversation.
For having me, man. Enjoyed it, man.
Absolutely.
I have some more stories for you, man.
Oh, there's a ton. I already know a few more that I want you to talk about. But again, we can't be here for 3 hours tonight. But listeners, again, if you've enjoyed this episode, you know, let us know. Go leave us a 5-star written review or just a review in period on Apple Podcasts. Let us know your thoughts on this podcast episode. And hey, if you go out there and use, you know, anything Robbie's talked about and have success using it this spring, make sure you go to the southernoutdoorsman.com, fill out a listener success form, and because we'd love to read about your story and see how everything's kind of played out for you and how, you know, some of this could work for you and had success. So appreciate all that, guys, and hey, we'll catch y'all back here for the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman podcast coming out here in just a few days. And y'all have a great weekend, and hopefully I'll go out there and kill some turkeys. Keep us posted on, tag us in your social media posts. So thanks again, everybody. We'll catch you back on another episode from the Southern Outdoors.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code SOUTHERN10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just southern deer hunters or southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.